Hey, Uplifters. I want to take a minute to talk about something personal to me. In my 40s, I started noticing my hair was shedding more. So a couple of months ago, I started using Nutrafol. I'm already seeing so much less shedding. And my teenage daughter, who notices absolutely everything, keeps commenting on how thick my hair looks. As someone who's built my career around rigorous science, I super love that Nutrafol was the first brand to clinically study hair thinning on menopausal women, which is why I am so proud to have them as a sponsor. Nutrafol takes a whole body approach to hair health, supporting you throughout your life stages. You can see thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code UPLIFTERS.
What I give a shout out to is my dear friend, Rachel Giordano, producer Rachel here in Michigan. She's amazing. She's a creator. She was a producer for The View. Then she was a producer for a radio show here in Detroit. And she is such an uplifter. Such a powerhouse.
Welcome to the Uplifters Podcast, where every week I get to talk to a smart, inspiring, courageous woman who's doing big stuff in the world. And for most of these women, they're over 40 and they're rewriting the rules for themselves about what good looks like and what big looks like. Today, I'm talking to Rachel Giordano, otherwise known as Producer Rachel, if you've heard of her. She was nominated for the show by the wonderful Kate Milligan. Rachel has been in the entertainment industry for almost 30 years. So yes, she is a grown woman. She began her career with the Barbara Walters specials and The View, and then moved on to Walt Disney Feature Animation, Shopping Network, iHeartMedia. And now she's the owner of a boutique production company focusing on helping small business owners and entrepreneurs tell their stories, podcasts and YouTube and social media. She's also the host of the wonderful Producer Rachel show. You should totally check it out. If you like this show, you'll love Producer Rachel. She's connecting with lots of creators and business owners just to discuss the challenges and victories of building their dreams. Not too different than what we are doing here. But in addition to the media career, Rachel is also a children's book author. She wrote this really lovely book called Santa's Secret Wishing Coin, which we're going to talk about today. And she's currently developing an impact effect accelerator to help other folks achieve the personal and business growth that she's experienced. Rachel, I'm so excited to hang out with you today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited too. I'm wearing Kate's shirt.
It's a one girl revolution shirt. And I mean, I say we make a two girl revolution today, Rachel.
We are.
If you could make a revolution, what would it be?
Probably moms with ADHD who have come to that space in their lives where their kids are old enough and that they can start focusing on something else. But because we have ADHD, we don't know what to focus on. That would be the revolution, because I feel like we can change the world because of the way that our brains work.
I love that, because what you're saying basically is let's use our superpowers in a way that lets them work for us instead of against us.
Correct.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I talked last night to a group of midlife women about the seven key principles that I've gleaned from this giant research project that is the Uplifters podcast, having interviewed now almost 150 women who are almost all over age 40. And like I said, doing some really extraordinary things in the world. And one of the seven key principles is to bring your weird. We are taught in childhood and adolescence, like, to avoid our weird at all cost. And weird is anything that makes us unique or stand out. And yet as adults, and certainly in second half of life, I think we discover that that's really where our unique perspective comes from, our unique impact comes from, and really how we can translate all of that weird, quote unquote, into a superpower. So how are you using your superpowers these days?
I'm trying to create as much as possible. I think there was a space and time where I really understood that in order to create, I have to stop consuming. And so...
Ooh, what?
I wanted to be a creator and not a consumer anymore. Does that make sense? And so in my so in your life, and you know this as a creator, we always feel like, oh, I don't have enough time. I don't have enough time to write the book. I don't have enough time to edit the video. But you do, you're just doom scrolling instead. When you really do a time audit, it's like, wait, I do have the time. I'm just choosing to consume other people's media instead of create my own. And so when I made that flip to, wait, I'm a creator, I'm not a consumer, it was a huge sort of like, oh, here we go. It started the journey. I had to make that mindset shift. And so if you ask me like about books I read, I don't. If you ask me about movies I watched, I don't. What's my favorite TV show? Don't know. So it's one of those things that I'm not invested in other people's media because I'm invested in myself as a creator. And I was tired of saying, well, tomorrow or next month or next year, we'll do that project. I was like, nope, we're going to do it now.
I mean, let's just go ahead and end this episode now. Because if we can just absorb that one thing, I think we are way ahead of yesterday. What did that look like in practice? Like, how did you wean yourself off the drug that is content?
I love creating it. And so for me, like, you're going to find this so odd. The thing that people can never get themselves to do, which is like edit, right? Like you have how many videos on your camera roll and you're like, I don't have the time to edit. That's my like fun private time. I love to edit. And so when I started to grow my business and I had to outsource editing, that made me so sad. So I started to outsource client videos to my team of editors because I've got a bunch of different ones. I have short form editors, documentary editors, podcast editors, YouTube editors. And so I was outsourcing my client stuff so that I could edit my own stuff because I knew my voice. I knew my story. I understood the thread that I was telling. And so I just started to make space for that time to edit. So like during the day as a business owner, it was the meetings, it was the Zooms, all that stuff, or video shoots. And then at night to decompress, that's why I edit. And so my husband thinks I'm crazy. Other people are like, wait, you do more work? It's not work to me. It's like creating music to me. When I edit, I have a very specific flow. And when you see my videos, you know it's one of my videos. Does that make sense? Even if it's for a client, you'll know immediately. You'll be like, oh, that's Rachel probably edited that. Because I see it as music, right? Everything is a 2, a 4, a 6, or an 8. And when I'm in that space and just going with my gut of like, oh, wow, like I can direct, I can write, I can tell stories. Eventually, one day, will we do it on a bigger scale? Yes. But right now, I'm doing it on a micro scale. And it's just, I love it so much. And so when I started to make space for that, I was like, oh, but if I can edit these videos, then I can make space to create more videos. So that's sort of how it started, where I was like, I can do this.
I love that so much. And like, I want to take a second to translate this to something broader from a behavioral perspective, which is that so often when we try to change a behavior, we focus on what we're giving up. You put all the energy and all the focus on the pleasure, on what you were getting, on giving yourself something. That is the paradigm shift.
And because I don't post because I have to post. I post because I like to share stuff with people. I post because I love doing it. And I feel like I work with business owners who are the reverse of that, where it's like they feel like they have to do this, right? And so the first thing I tell everybody is no one told you that you had to post on Instagram or Facebook. Like you don't have to market that way. You actually don't have to do any of this. There's other ways that you can go about meeting people, networking, right? Like actually talking to people. You don't have to go this route. If this is overwhelming and you feel like you're drowning and you can't keep up with the algorithm, then don't. It's okay. Mm. And so I think that when you, especially for clients, when I give them that permission to not have to keep up with everybody else, to stop comparing yourself to everyone else, and then also make the flip to a creator, not a consumer, you start to get excited about what to share with people. And then you don't get lost in the sauce of it. Does that make sense? Because you're posting for pleasure, not because you have to.
And posting for yourself, right? Yeah. Like, I read Jay Shetty said that somewhere that I read yesterday, that as a creator, he's creating content that he loves. I am talking to people I want to talk to. Like, that's why I get so excited every time my spreadsheet gets another line in it, because that row is just one more amazing person that I get to know a little bit better. And then I get to have a conversation with. I mean, and like, oh my gosh, that's like my candy or ice cream, right? Like, I just want more of it because I like it.
Well, and then you know this, because that's how why I started my podcast. I just started my podcast because the people that I was reaching out to, I knew wouldn't be like, let's go meet for coffee, right? Because they were on this level and I wasn't on that level. Mm-hmm. And I get it. They don't know who I am, and it's not a popular podcast. I don't have like the fake statistics to give them, but they would maybe not meet me for coffee, but they would come in on for an interview. Does that make sense? And so it just opened different doors for conversations with people that I was interested in. I'm my own biggest fan. And I really am. Like, I'll post
I love that.
And you know, you get those emails all the time. Hey, your like views are low or whatever. Like, I can help you. It's like, I don't care. It's totally fine right now. It's not something I'm trying to monetize. I just enjoy doing it. And then when you turn this into a business, that's a whole other set of expectations. And, you know, I don't necessarily want that, right? And I started getting people asking to be on my podcast. And I was like, oh God, what do I do with this? I was so used to like, I don't know that I, you know, relate to this person anyway. I don't know that I want to promote them anyway. It was very weird. So when that started happening, that's when I was like, oh God, are you moving into like, this could be a business territory? I don't know. So I'm at that like crux right now. I'm like, what do I want to do? And you also know when you set your systems up, I don't know if you edit your own stuff. I don't know if you post your own stuff, but it's overwhelming. And so anybody that always asks me like, oh, I'm thinking about starting a podcast, I always just say, just go live. Try going live consistently.
Yes.
And then it's done. It's shipped. You don't have to worry about a cover photo, a title, all the stuff. Yes. Can you go in and edit and post it? Sure. You can actually pull that live and make it an episode that lives forever. Absolutely. Like, you can add all the bells and whistles to it if you want to. But what I find is people don't understand that like podcasting is a full-time job in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I started to do it just because I love it. I love this work. My life is media. So for me, it's not hard. For other people to have no idea how to get into this, it's hard. There's a learning curve.
I like this idea too that's coming through here, which is that you didn't get into this because you had to. And so shaping it into something based on other people's expectations is going to destroy the joy for you. Now, that doesn't mean it can't become something entirely different than that you want it to be, because I think that will happen for all of us. Like, the point is not to know all the answers when we start, but to wade in, find out what works, discover what we like and want more of and what we want less of, and keep designing against that data. But it can't be like these external voices telling us what we want and expect ourselves that that's going to give us more pleasure or more satisfaction than listening to what we want.
Well, because it also puts you in that space of like, which niche is going to be the most effective, right? Like, what niche am I going to get the most hits on? What's not oversaturated? Because those are the things you start thinking about. Like, how can I stand out in an oversaturated world where there's millions of podcasts now? I didn't want to have to think about that stuff. I was like, it's not why I'm doing it. I'm just doing it to amplify other people's voices who I love. And also just ask people serious questions. When I first started, I started asking people because it was congruent with me growing my business. And I remember there was a day I had an interview booked, and I'm so happy it was with, his name is Kyle Draper. He's a former pastor. And I started crying with him because I was like, I had to ask my husband if I can go into my savings, like our savings, to pay payroll for my freelancers because I didn't meet payroll and they were getting more money that month than I was getting. And I was like, nobody talks about this. Is this a thing? And he was like, it's absolutely a thing. We've all had to do it. And I was like, wait, why does nobody talk about this? He's like, because people are embarrassed. They want to do like the fun, flashy, like my business is amazing. But realistically, like owning a business and being a business owner, an entrepreneur, a small business owner, or a side hustler, it is not easy and it changes constantly. And so in that moment, I was like, I felt so good that I could be honest with him. I trusted him. I felt good in his space, but also he didn't give me a bullshit answer back. Do you know what I'm saying? He wasn't like, oh no, I've never had to do that. Everything's great. It was like, no, this shit sucks sometimes. Like, it's not easy. So.
Yeah. I think that normalizing is so important, but also being brave enough to ask the questions. what stops us so often is we hold all these like little fantasy worlds in our heads, and then we are holding ourselves to an unrealistic standard. And we're like, this is not right for me. I can't do this. And we just create reinforcement of our disbelief instead of reinforcement of possibility, which is what happened in that conversation.
Well, and staying in that same vein, I mean, comparison is the thief of joy, right? You said how many people have you interviewed so far?
Correct. 150.
Right. Okay. Kate Milligan and her One Girl Revolution podcast, I think, is at over 400. I'm at 24.
Yeah.
Right?
Very
so like in my head, like,
yeah.
Where do I think I'm going to be? And so I had to disconnect from where everybody else is and what everybody else is doing, because I'm not going to be able to keep up with that. I need to be able to keep up with me. I'm not running a race with you or Kay or anybody else with a podcast. We're not. I'm doing my own thing. And when you start to feel like you're in that space where you're like, you're comparing yourself to everybody else. Number one, I don't feel like we can be creative in that space because we're blocking off.
Agree.
Whatever channel messages we're
editing.
Right. We're editing. And then how?
And not in the fun way.
No. And then where does genius come from? Does genius come from doing what everyone else is doing? No.
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 No. No. Nor does satisfaction, though, that deep down feeling of being satisfied. That comes from doing what matters to us. Comparison is, it's an unachievable KPI.
Correct.
Just like expecting perfection.
Yeah, there's no such thing as perfect. Somebody said perfect is too late. Do it messy. Do it messy.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, and then also, side note, women.
I said that to a client last week. I was like, you have full permission to do this badly. And she came back the next week and she was like, that's the most important thing you have ever said to me. And I get it, because it wasn't something I could say to myself for years.
Yes. That's the hardest, is us taking our own advice.
Yeah.
I'm my own worst client. I'm working it out. But that's the other thing, like explaining to people, you don't have to post anything either. Just record the thing, write the thing, right? Like write the book, write the article,
make something.
The substance. Just make it. No one's saying press publish. Can you even make the thing? I think a lot of people think like, what podcast would work? Well, what do you want to do? What do you find joy in? Because God forbid you start and you're like, oh my God, I'm stuck in this niche and I want to pivot. And I have to start all over again. That's why I say go live, test it out, see what you like. There's no expectation. And then in like 6 months, if you're like, I like this, this is, I think I found my voice, I'm good at this, this is the niche I want to be in, then you can start thinking, okay, how do I start a podcast? But women of our age learning new things, I think at first it's overwhelming, right? Because it's like, oh my God, so much information. How am I going to understand this? I'm behind. But like, just take one little thing at a time. Just one little thing at a time. Everyone can do this. Everyone can do anything. We just have to take one little thing at a time. Don't worry about the end. There is no end. The goalposts always move. Just worry about what's the next step I have to take to do this thing.
Yes, yes, yes. Rachel Lipson, I think episode 3 of this podcast, like OG, said, everyone has ideas. Only entrepreneurs act on them. And then I remember Sonia Weiss-Apel in another really early episode said that the secret to her success was turning ideas into action steps. And I think that is so much at the core of what you're saying. It's like sitting around thinking about stuff is cool. Like, it's great to have ideas, and they're not going to go anywhere outside of your head if they don't turn into actions.
I think it depends. I think there are some things, because I don't know if you've ever seen something where somebody does something and you're like, oh my God, I had an idea for that, right? I think whether it's God consciousness, the collective, the universe, whatever you believe, if it's such a strong pull, it will find somebody to take action on it. Does that make sense?
Fair,
like,
fair.
It will find somebody.
You're not going to take
you
them anywhere
may not
without
be the
action.
One, right. But like somebody will, if it's that deep, it always will find somebody to transmute it and translate it.
And yet, I think as we say that, I think it probably brings up the fear in a lot of people that like, oh, well, somebody already took my idea. Load of baloney. Impossible, because nobody else has your unique perspective.
Say that again, because I feel like the people don't get it. Like when you tell people, oh, because you are you, like I'm not you, you're not me,
it
like
is
you
impossible.
Are you. I feel like that's where the other shift started to change for me. I felt like, again, I'm one of however many people doing this. I should have started years ago when I like wanted to and I didn't. But you have to get out of your head in that way.
Yeah.
The next best step, number one, but number two, do you value yourself and what you want and your time? And if you do, then you'll find the time to do the thing, whatever it is. And it sort of like is magical where you'll realize, wait, I can do this here. I can do this here. I can do this here. And then once you get to know it, it gets easier and easier as you go.
Yeah, I love what you're saying there too, because it brings up this idea of time, and it does feel like our most precious non-renewable resource. We have the time, we have how we use the time, to your point about scrolling and what I call low value time, is available to us to translate into high value time. And it doesn't have to be hours and hours and hours. It can be the margins. It can be an energizing 10 minutes in the middle of the day. Placing it where it fits and where it's repeatable is actually far more important from a behavioral change standpoint.
1,000%. And then when you start with the idea that we just talked about, which is like, you are the thing, right? Like nobody is you. And then you double down on, okay, well, now I'm just executing my vision the way I see it. Maybe I don't see it the same way other places. It doesn't mean it's wrong. Then I think even more magic starts to happen. Because like once you start to get like a little bit of, even online, or someone's like, oh my God, that's a great idea. It's like, okay, I am on the right track. But you also don't need other people to validate it either. Be careful who you tell your dreams to.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with be careful, because other people can shoot down your dreams, dilute them, make you feel unworthy of going after them. But I'm not worried about telling them, because they're going to run off and do it. Because again, they can't.
Correct.
I'm irreplaceable.
Exactly.
And that is truer than ever in an age of AI. Right? Like the only thing that is going to distinguish us from machines is a strong point of view.
1,000%. I've had a hard time embracing my weird, because I felt like I had to stay in a certain lane where it's like, well, if I want corporate clients, they're not going to want this like weird woman who's like almost 50, who's like, yeah, I channel in her voices. Like nobody's going to want that part.
I want it.
Right. That's the thing. That's what, but maybe they do. And you just don't know. And then maybe that's not my client, right? Like how many people exist in this world that it's like, oh, okay.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Next year, we'll really be embracing the weird.
That's so exciting.
It is. And I feel like, I also feel like at 50, I can hide under the guise of like, I'm an old lady. I don't know what I'm talking about. Like, I can't wait to be 70 where I can be like, I don't know. I'm just crazy old lady. But I'm not quite there yet, but I can't wait. Because then I just like, oh yeah, I'm just a crazy lady. I can just embrace the weird under the guise of, you know, if you don't get it, you don't get it. But if you do, you do.
For so many of us, we seek pivots in second half for greater creative freedom. So it is finding that line.
I had to understand, and I'm finally coming into this, that I'm not just one thing. Right? Uh-huh. Like, yes, I can be a business owner. Yes, I can be a mom. Yes, I can be a wife.
Yeah.
I deal with each of those things completely differently. There's no one way. And I'm also empathic. So I'm going to possibly pick up on the way that you're communicating and change the way I'm communicating.
Yeah.
Depending on what I want to accomplish, right? In the thing. So I'm fluid and that's okay. I don't fit in a niche. I think that was the hardest thing with content to begin with. And my biggest complaint, I've talked to YouTube, I've talked to Instagram, like I don't fit in a niche. And the way your algorithm works is it needs to know who to send this to. I don't fit in that. One day it's going to be a vlog. The next day I'm going to be crying. The next.
Is there an ADHD mom content creator vlogger podcaster hashtag?
Right. Who like has a messy house, but like also can clean on an ADHD high, who wears her hair in a messy bun, but I can also wear a suit, right? Like it's fluid. And so with YouTube, what I sort of started to see is like, okay, we can be our own networks. We don't need to be greenlit by other people. Our playlists are really our shows. So like imagine how a network would have like comedies and late night and dramas, right? So our channels are umbrella network, and then our playlists are our scheduled like series. It doesn't quite work that way yet, but I have a feeling it's going to, because I can't imagine people consistently trying to start another channel for their next niche, right? Like, and I know that's what people are doing because that's how it works right now, but it's like,
that's so interesting.
Why can't I be the umbrella channel, and under here in my playlist are my series, and they're different things for different people. And like, I get it.
That makes so much sense to me.
But it's hard to sell, right? So like, I own a construction company with my husband, but the other stuff, some of the other stuff that I do, it's not like being just a business owner that focuses on media. It's not, it's a weird space. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know where to put that. So I understand why they want us to niche down. I completely get it. But if you're looking at yourself as a network, and like, I've got documentaries I'm making, I've got the children's book, I have so many different things, and none of them have to do with each other. So am I really going to have to create a different page for every single thing, or can it all live under my brand umbrella?
Mm-hmm.
So like, I'm not playing the game right, and I get that, but I don't have enough time to start 10 more channels and 10 more like social media channels.
Well, what I love about it is, I know you say you do all the things differently, but I have a deep belief that how we do one thing is how we do everything. And aligned with what you were saying about a Rachel edited video looks like a Rachel edited video, the core thing here is you. And for women who've had multiple chapters, we can get so worked up and paralyzed by the need to create a coherent story that we share no story. We create nothing, or we create it and we hide it. And we don't have the impact or the connection that we seek, because we're just over here like, well, this won't make sense. If you mix all the colors together, you're like, there's no pink and blue and yellow and red. It's just some gushy gray mess. I think we worry about that too much, because actually what happens more often is what I call wearing the kimono and like Mrs. Ropering it, and just kind of like getting like all the little pieces patched together and just being like, this is Rachel. And that's actually what I super love about the name Producer Rachel, because when I read that, what I think is, this is this one creative person as a human umbrella.
Yes, I am the brand.
You are.
And that, I think, is so hard for people to understand, because that's not how we exist in this world of consuming content, mm-hmm. brands, mm-hmm. and anything, right? The book, right. Whatever. So we don't know which story to tell, because we're always just like, what story am I telling? What niche am I like broadcasting to? And yes, we need to make money. We need to pay bills. But if you take that out of it and just really say, hey, I give you the opportunity to like say whatever to whomever, however you want to, it's like I can just be me, and people understand what comes along with that. You may not like the vlogs, but you may love this content. You may not like this content, but you might like that content. And that's okay. It exists everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a really hard time just boiling myself down to one thing. I mean, it's probably ADHD brain, but like, can I do all things? Yes. If I systemize it and grow my team appropriately and can teach them, okay, these are the things, these are my expectations. And so I hired a VA, and that was life-changing. I was so scared at first, because I was like, how am I going to...
Not everybody knows what a VA is.
Virtual assistant, who also helps me. Mine's Princess. I love her so much.
Oh my gosh. I love their name is Princess.
Their name is Princess.
Perfect.
Of course. But like, being able to take it to that next step, I know a lot of people, especially women, because it's like, well, where am I going to find the money for this? How am I going to afford this? And it's like, you can't afford not to do it. At a certain point in time, you have to trust that God, universe, whatever, will bring you the business to fill that gap. I did the same thing with... with my home. I was feeling like a terrible like wife and mom, because I was putting everything into every minute of working with clients, working on client stuff, and I couldn't clean, I couldn't do the laundry. And I had a friend once say to me, like, well, if it doesn't move the needle in my business, I outsource it. She's like, if it doesn't make me money, if it doesn't help my business, like, laundry is a repeatable task, dishes are a repeatable task, what's for dinner is a repeatable task. You can outsource all of those things, And I was like, well, how did you afford it? She's like, at first I was scared because it's like, oh God, this is going to be hard. But when you open up the time to work on the business to make more money, it fills the gap by itself. So like I hired a cleaning lady to come help me. I'm helping a small business. I have landscapers now for the lawn, helping another small business. I order meals for my
kids.
You're
investing in your community.
And in myself. My time is worth money. Should I be washing the dishes or should I be working on the next account? Right? And so it flipped everything around. Like my husband came home for lunch today to a clean house because the cleaning lady had just left. My son heated up his little meal that I have ready to go because I'm like, I don't have the wherewithal to be like, you know, he just came home from school, honey. What can I make you as a snack? I wish I was that mom in my head. I thought I was going to be that, like, you know, you're coming home to warm baked chocolate chip cookies, mom. I'm not. I'm not. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have other strengths.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They don't love my other strengths, but I have other strengths.
I bet they do. I bet you're a fun mom.
I try to be. When they were younger, it was more fun. Now that I'm like, they're 13 and 14. It's just like they think my voice is grating. It's like, it's just like whatever. Go do your own thing. It's fine.
My 14-year-old's new favorite statement is, "You're so old." And I'm like, "Yes, I am."
Yes.
That's not equate irrelevant.
We're Gen X. It was like, "What are we again?" I don't even know. I'm that age too, where I'm like, what is the thing that does the thing that has a pen? Yes, a pen.
And who was the guy who was in the thing?
Yes. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. We're Gen X, which quite honestly is the best generation. We're fucking badasses, number one. I was a latchkey kid. Like, I remember coming home and watching like soap operas and then Oprah. Like, Oprah was my best friend. So, like, we lived in that space of not having devices and internet. Mm-hmm. So I love our generation. I feel so blessed that I am an 80s kid, that we grew up in that space. So my kids are very aware of generations. So my daughter would be like, oh, you're so Gen X. That's such a Gen X thing.
Yes.
I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
It is. One of my friends told me she doesn't like the way you edit. And I was like, well, tell her to bring it on. Like, show me the videos she's editing. Yeah. I'd love to outsource some of that stuff. What are you editing? What do you got? Nothing. She doesn't do it. And I was like, great. Then don't give me an opinion on something that you've never done yourself.
So, well, and that's like, if you would ask me what my one girl revolution would be, it would be to disprove this theory that we are irrelevant after age 40, because we are actually better resourced than at any point in our lives, right? We have all of that evidence from our youth about how to take care of ourselves, what works for us, what doesn't. Maybe we don't have all the money we thought we would have at this age, but we have...
because we're not boomers with a retirement fund.
We have a community of people. We've learned how to regulate through the highs and lows of life. I mean, like, we've got mad resources and skills.
We are probably the people everyone should be hiring, but we're also now facing that ageist age, right? Where it's like, oh, they're old.
That's why we're just going to go make our own thing.
Right. And so most
together.
Of us are going to go do that now. Like, I don't need to make you more money. I can tell you how, but if you don't want me to help you, that's fine. I'll just keep doing it on my own together with other people.
I think we're all going to team up.
I feel, honestly, we probably should, because I feel like we can make so much change. We're scrappy. We can do it all and we'll figure it out.
We sure can. We're resourceful.
We may not have good boundaries because...
I don't know what you mean.
I'm trying to undo like the toxic hustle culture, right? Because when you work for a corporation, like, you know, as much as they pretend like they have, oh, we totally respect your boundaries, they don't. So I'm trying to figure out, okay, how can I respect my own boundaries and get out of that hustle mindset? It's hard.
Yeah, it is. It is. I do weird stuff throughout the day to prove to myself that I'm in charge.
Like what? Give me an example. I need
to
know.
Like, I just emptied the compost bin right before this. I was like, I've got 3 minutes. Ooh, I'm going to go outside. And then, like, and I did 10 push-ups.
I washed the dishes. I was happy about that.
Nice.
I was like, I'm going to.
It feels pretty good, right?
I wanted to, like, listen to a podcast. And so I was like, I'm just going to wash the dishes and listen to a podcast. So I was like, okay, perfect. Done.
I'm in charge.
Well, it's also one of those things when the cleaning lady is coming, I have to pre-clean because I don't want her to know how disgusting I am. She made a comment. She goes, she beat me to the house before I could finish. And so she's like, do you cook a lot? And I was like, no, this is a week's worth of dishes because no one, God forbid anyone else do them. So no, I don't cook a lot at all. This is just the staff.
The dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah. Because I live in the household of like, oh, it's not me. It's their turn. And I don't care.
Oh, it's their turn. I'm so over that one.
I hate it.
Why do I have to do it? Because
I said so.
That's enough. Like,
right. You live here. God.
This is not my job.
No.
Yeah. I feel like I have not asked you a single question. Tell me about your book.
With the book, the hard part was I had this idea after my kids came to me. They were that like 6, 7 age where they were like, we just have to ask you a question. Like, is Santa real? Like, we're questioning it. And I wasn't ready for them to give up the magic, right? I didn't want to be the one to see them. Like, I didn't want to see the magic leave their eyes. And I kind of like...
I didn't want to be the one to admit that I'd been lying to them all that time.
That my husband was like, wait till they find out you've been lying. I was like, no, we're going to keep the lie. All right, here we go. And so I started to get into like the magic of Christmas is really like number one, believing. And then also number two, understanding that it's about giving to others, not getting. And so
beautiful.
I had always done these incredible photo shoots every like season with my family. And then also every winter.
Now I know you're that mom.
I am. I'm crazy. Oh, I would like matter. I was insane.
Can we have some for the show notes?
I will. Absolutely.
Yeah. I need some for this thing.
I will give you some. And so I called up my friend, Kelly, who is an amazing photographer, and she used to do Santa sessions. And I was like, I have this idea. Can you help me execute this? I don't have the full story, but I kind of know where I want to go with it. And then I reached out to Santa and I basically said, hey, if you have some time, because it was October, it wasn't too busy yet. If you have some time, can you come on by? And he did. And so my children were like, what is happening? And I'm like, I'm writing a children's book. I don't know how it's going to end. I don't know where it's going to go, but we're going to like explore through this process with Santa, asking questions, let's meet him. So I created this whole story, Santa's Secret Wishing Coin.
Oh my God.
And it's literally the pictures from that day that we took in this beautiful brownstone in Detroit. Like, that's not an illustration, that's a picture, right?
They're stunning.
So I was like,
by the way, I only really release this on audio. So this is my chance to say, like, oh, by the way, there is a YouTube version of this podcast that you can watch.
Say it right now.
But like two other people will watch it with you. So
that's fine. It's all right.
Go watch.
You want to see pictures.
You can see Rachel's beautiful book.
So essentially, it's really about my kids on this day understanding, because they were obsessed with catching Santa. So Sophia and Nico, who are my children in the book, but they're the characters in the book, have a night with Santa, who comes to visit them because he realizes they were believing less and less. And what he explains to them, and this moment really happened, which is where all of this came from. As I'm sitting with the photographer and we're looking over pictures, right? And I'm trying to figure out, like, where is this going? Santa Claus pulls my kids aside onto this beautiful vintage red velvet couch, and he pulls out of his pocket a coin. And I literally am like watching out of the corner of my eye, like, what is happening? And I told the photographer, I was like, really quickly, like, just get the pictures, just get the pictures. And this isn't the coin. This is the coin that I created for the book. The coin he had was a different type of a coin, but it was similar. And so he was explaining to them, on Christmas Eve, you take the coin, you put the coin in your hand, and have all the family members put your hands on top of hands, right? So you can see that visual, right? And then you all wish for what you want. But the wish has to be agreed upon by everybody. You all have to believe in the wish, i.e., you know, I want this under the tree. Well, okay, that's a great wish, but is there something else you want to wish for, right? Like, wink, wink, as the parent. And he also explains that all wishes come true, but if you believe and everybody agrees, you may find it under the tree tomorrow. And then you take the coin and you put it under your pillow Christmas Eve, and then maybe Christmas morning, you'll wake up and your wish is under the tree. And so he's going through this with them, and I'm like, that's it. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then he has this little moment where he explains to them, like, the magic of Christmas isn't in the getting, it's in the giving. And if you believe you may not get it today. It may not be tomorrow, but eventually it will come into your life if you believe enough and you can be in that feeling and that spirit of Christmas and not just about, what am I getting? It's about believing. So it's such a great, I'm working on how I say it.
It's like manifestation 202.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
But yeah, so the Santa, I'm going to show you Santa. So he's an incredibly...
the most perfect Santa ever.
Beautiful man. Like just so, his heart and everything. And so it was just, it was this magical day that allowed my kids to really understand this is about giving to others and believing together as a family and not just like, what am I getting?
I also love, I always like poke at the idea that you should keep your birthday wish hidden and that's how it'll come true. I'm like,
no, tell people.
No wish has ever come true hiding it in secret. The secret is tell everyone.
Yes. It's like, it took me so long to be like,
what is it?
I'm a children's book author. I am an author. I am. Instead of like, well, I have this idea and I wish. And it's like, no, I am. And when you start to talk about it more and more and more, like I'm trying to get used to talking about it. So I'm working on that too. You just have to start saying the thing out loud. I'm a children's book author.
Yeah, you are. And you are.
I am. I know, it's crazy. And I became my own publisher.
There's no like certain number of books you have to sell to be an author.
No. That's the craziest thing. That's the other thing.
You don't actually have to sell any books to be an author.
I really wanted to do this special coin. I want one that's different every year. I did not order them from China. There is a company here in Ohio called the Osborne Coin Company, and they've been making coins since the 1800s. And so I went and visited the factory, and it was very important to me that it was made here. They put a spot in their shipping area for North Pole pickup. So when they ship out my coins, the coins go to the North Pole. Santa puts his magic on the coins. And then those are the coins I ship when people purchase them. So you get this cute little, like this little velvet.
This is so beautiful.
But because of this extra aspect, I couldn't just go on Amazon. I couldn't just say, oh, here's just the book. I had a publisher that's like, oh, we can do it, but we can't do the coin. Can you just do the book? And I said, no. I was like, no. And she's like, then you're going to have to do it yourself. And I was like, great. So I called my husband and I said, how much money can we take out of savings and 401k so I can invest in my own publishing company? And he was like, okay, let's do it. Because he believes in it. He loves it. He's seen this growth process. And so sometimes we do have to invest in ourselves. Sometimes it does mean money out of our own pockets.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing I'm doing right now is going to bookstores. Because I am the publisher, so I have to be the one to like market it. That was hard for me at first because it's like, oh God, I have this thing. Like, hi, can I talk to you about this? And now like, I'm so proud of it. I don't not want to talk about it. So it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, hey, I have this thing. Like there's all these things that will go wrong.
Yeah.
But they're not walls that we can't get through. Mm-hmm. They're literally just obstacles that when you realize, oh, I just have to learn how to do this next best thing. And you just step around it and you do the next best thing.
Yeah. And then you know that thing.
Yeah, that's the
thing.
You're
adding it to your toolkit.
If you want to know how to publish a children's book, I can tell you. And how to create a thing to go with.
Reach out to producer Rachel.
So it's fascinating that I know this thing. So I'm excited to publish more books. I can do it under my own imprint. I know I have my own ISBNs. It's amazing. Same thing with the YouTube. You don't need your project to be greenlit by Netflix or HBO. You can do it yourself.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating to now be in the part of the pipeline where it's like, now we market. And marketing is probably the hardest and most important part. And so I think so many people are like, I got the book done. And then you don't realize like, great, now you still, like we're still, there's more work to do.
Yeah. And like you said, that's why it's so important to create something you believe in and that you love and that you're proud of and you're excited to stand behind. Something you're uniquely interested in talking about over and over and over again. But it's also why you get a community, because you're not supposed to do it alone. You're supposed to do it with us, right? Like we uplifters, we are here to market it with you, to go read the book, to tell other people that we read the book, that we love the book.
Yes. And in that same space of people who are amplifying your message, I think a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to do this thing and then I'm just going to launch it. And they think everyone's just going to buy it. The most fascinating thing to me was, and I tell this to clients all the time, like, you have to grow the community first. You have to make the connections first. You can't just launch to nobody. Nobody cares. Like, that's my next book, literally, is Nobody Cares. Not for children. But it's like, it's just do it. They're like, nobody cares.
That for kids.
No, I mean, they probably should learn it sooner than later. Nobody cares.
Okay, if you're going to write that one, then I'm going to write, You're Going to Be Disappointed.
Yes, you should write that one. Oh my God, that would be a great book. That should be for kids graduating from college. You're Going to Be Disappointed.
An uplifting book.
It is.
It is uplifting.
It is actually very uplifting because you're being honest.
Well, and I think it's really helpful to not catastrophize disappointment and to be like, oh yeah, exactly. I'm going to be disappointed. Great.
Yes.
Moving on.
Well, also, I think we attach ourselves to outcomes, again, because comparison. So like, well, this person did amazing things and mine's not doing it. It's not your story. It's not your journey. So we have to like step back and realize, okay, like nobody cares until they do. Nobody cares until they do.
Until they do. This has been so much freaking fun talking to you. I could talk to you for 14 more hours, so there'll be a part two. Who do you want to nominate for the Uplifters podcast?
So Dr. Rhonda Vaughn, I love her. She is my uplifter, literally. I was in this situation where I was in the parking lot of my doctor's office realizing I have a small business and I have to market myself. And it's the hardest thing I have ever had to do is market myself because I've always been in a situation where I've been headhunted. And so I got in through a friend, got in contact with her, and just there are people in our life that are great at amplifying your message. And she is one of those people that completely just changed the way that I saw connection, community, and support from other women. It's changed my life.
Wow. And you were there at that for Kate. So what strikes me about that is how that ripples and how if we want to feel a greater sense of community, the greatest way to do that is to be in community, to lift up others.
Correct. And really quickly, when you're scrolling online and you have people that are liking and commenting and doing all these other things for strangers, but they're not doing it for you and they're your friends or your family, I had to get over that after a while.
Yeah.
But if you are out there, like, please, like, support your small creator. Support this. Like, liking and subscribing, commenting, it really takes you seconds to do, and it's free. It costs you nothing, and it could change our lives.
It's true. It's true. That is how it happens. It happens one little moment at a time. And I think in all things in the world, we feel powerless because we feel like we can't change the 100%. And so the way we do that is we change 2%. We do our little tiny step. And then it adds up with a bunch of other little tiny steps and things are different.
Yes, honestly, like our...
Let's figure it out together.
...group of women, our community, are happy to lift each other up. We, instead of the notion of trying to shove another seat at the table, I think all of us just created bigger tables.
Uh-huh. I love that. So to support you, where should we go? And it'll all be in the show notes.
Well, you can do sngmediagroup.com, which I know is such a boring name, but like whatever. And then I have santassecretwishingcoin.com if you want more information about how to buy the book, how to buy the coins. There's different bundles. There's a whole bunch of different things. And then I'm going to add a spot where if people want to donate a book and a coin, that we can start doing that too. So
it's really beautiful.
Thank you.
Right. Well, I can't wait. I'm going to go order the book right now.
I love you so much.
So moved by it.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
And share it with everyone I can.
I love
you. And then you have to come to Uplifters Live next year and bring books. And
I absolutely will.
Share them with other uplifters. It'll be so great.
You're amazing.
Thank you for listening to the Uplifters podcast. If you're getting a boost from these episodes, please share them with the uplifters in your life. And then join us in conversation over at theuplifterspodcast.com. Head over to Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast and like, follow, and rate our show. It'll really help us connect with more uplifters and it'll ensure you never miss one of these beautiful stories. Mwah! Big love.
Painted water sunshine with rosemary and thyme. Dwelling not perplexing, though you find it vexing. Toss a star and hover, be your own best lover. Relative relish in a new prime. Plant a tree in springtime. Dance with that old hindsight. Bring the sun to twilight. Lift you up. Whoa. Lift you up. Whoa. Lift you up. Whoa. Lift you up. Lift you up, whoa, lift you up, whoa, lift you up, whoa, lift you up.
Beautiful. It's that little thing you did with your voice.
Right, in the pre-chorus. Right?
Uh-huh. I was like...
Mommy, stop crying. Mommy, stop crying. You're disturbing the peace.